Baba sends Kusum Baba sends his salams from warm and beautiful Puerto Rico. Our story started when Allah Ta'ala taught the names of all and everything to Prophet Adam. When we say Allah Ta'ala taught the names, since all and everything is from Allah Ta'ala, when we say the names, when we say Allah Ta'ala taught the names, we really don't mean that Allah Ta'ala taught that this is a cup, this is a font, this is a carpet. Allah Ta'ala thought the essence of things, because all and everything is from Him, the names really associated with the essence of things, which are the beautiful qualities of Him. When Allah Ta'ala thought the names of all and everything to Prophet Adam, what is given to Prophet Adam are his beautiful attributes, what is thought. Now here, the important thing is Allah Ta'ala becomes the teacher. Allah Ta'ala becomes the teacher of Prophet Adam. This is very important. When Allah Ta'ala becomes the teacher, when Allah Ta'ala is the teacher, then the student becomes what is being thought of. See, this is a lot different than how we teach. The way we teach is, for example, you want to teach someone who has never heard what generosity means. How do you teach? So you first make the definition of generosity. So if someone comes, I don't know what generosity is. Oh, generosity is selflessly give in abundance of your time, of your money. A completely confusing definition. To be able to teach someone, the way we do is we kind of actually take the person and then introduce with someone who is generous, actually make that person follow a generous person so that he understands the qualities and interactions of it. We ask that person spend some time with it, but this is the extent. This is the extent we teach something. When Allah Ta'ala teaches generosity, you become generous. So when Allah Ta'ala taught the name of all and everything to Prophet Adam, He gave His qualities, beautiful qualities to Prophet Adam. And those qualities, He passed those qualities to us. Every year, students come from New Hampshire, and then they ask us to teach about Islam. So the kids, how are you going to teach them Islam? So I ask them, have you ever heard the word Islam? From media, from TV, from presidential candidates or something? Yes, we all know, you know, all this stuff. That's good. This is really the perception of others. This is one, you know, level of information. You got the perception of what other thinks about Islam. This is really good. Anyone of you really went out and did some research, read some books? A couple of hands, you know, and I read a book about Islam. Well, this is really more than, you know, the perceptions of others, because you know you have the control. You kind of start reading and choose what you want to learn. Anybody has Muslim friends? No hands. Anybody went to an Islamic country, lived there? No hands. So this is the extent we can teach. And ultimately, it is not possible to teach anyone Islam unless they become Muslim. You can only teach Islam when they become Muslim. For example, all the people who probably, you know, remember their religion from, came to Islam from other religions, will confirm that they learned Islam after they become one. Am I right? Anyway, so when Allah Ta'ala became the teacher, Prophet Adam absorbed those qualities and passed. You know, take all those qualities away, remove those qualities, what remains is a handful of ashes when you got cremated. What remains when you take all those qualities, what is passed to us, all these qualities, take all these qualities away. We are a little bit of minerals, a little bit of vegetable, a lot of animal, more like a zoo. This is really what remains if you take those qualities off. What makes us a human, what makes us supreme, those qualities, and they don't belong to us. The important thing is, what makes us a supreme creation doesn't belong to us. It's a gift that is given by Allah Ta'ala. That's the reason why, you know, angels were puzzled when they were asked to prostrate in front of Adam. Because when they looked at it, they looked at a handful of ashes. They looked a little bit of mineral, a little bit of vegetable, a little bit of animal. They saw someone who would shed blood. They saw someone who has the potential to create anarchy. So they were puzzled. I mean, other than Iblis, everybody prostrated, but they were puzzled, and kind of they expressed their puzzlement. But you know, there's a beautiful hadith. If you know something, and if you act upon that knowledge, Allah Ta'ala teaches you more. Allah Ta'ala becomes your teacher. If you know something and act upon that, in that case, the angels really did not see anything valuable to prostrate, but still they obeyed. Because they obeyed, so they prostrate first, because they had to obey. They obeyed Allah Ta'ala. When they did what they know, Allah Ta'ala taught them what they didn't. Meaning that after the first prostration, they saw that actually Prophet Adam, that they are prostrating, has all these beautiful qualities, and all these qualities belong to Allah Ta'ala. When they saw that, they prostrated a second time. The second prostration is not for the handful of ashes, but to the qualities of Allah Ta'ala. This is why we do second sujood in the namaz, in the prayer. Anyway, so again, these are the qualities that makes us really the supreme creation, makes us distinct us from other creation, but still ourselves covers those qualities like a sandstone. And all the identities that we have, who we are, like a blanket, more like a quilt. You know, one piece of a little bit of father, a little bit of mother. Your profession is another piece of the quilt. You know, your possessions, your wealth, all and everything that you identify yourself with becomes a blanket. It covers up that treasure, which is really dusted, lying down under the sandstorm, and in it all the valuable treasure, all the valuable qualities are in there waiting to be unlocked, waiting to be surfaced out. All the prophets, 124,000 prophets, all the prophets, all the messages, all the books were sent so that we take that blanket out, so that we can actually surface that treasure chest and then take out all those gems. All the teachings are for this purpose. The good thing about that is, since Allah Ta'ala sent 124,000 prophets and all these messages, the indication of it that it is possible. It is possible to take that blanket out. It is possible to remove that self, which is covering, completely covering this treasure chest. Otherwise, why would Allah Ta'ala have sent all these prophets? So there is a hope. There's an hope that we can clean the dust of this treasure chest and then bring everything out. Now, many people think that they are the way they are because of their genes. Your genes are not your destiny. Your genes does not control your destiny. You can control your genes. Actually, I think scientifically they started showing this, that you can actually switch on and off certain genes by behavior, by behaving this way or that way. You can actually, by having certain chemistry, feelings, emotions, by going through certain experiences, you can turn on and off certain switches. Now, there's a beautiful hadith in that Prophet. Rasulullah says that every child is born with the nature of a Muslim. When every child is born, the same treasure that Prophet Adam had is also given as a gift to every child. So every child has this incredible potential. They are born as a Muslim. They are perfect. You have those. We have those. And then he says that they are born with all the qualities. They are born perfect. And then how the hadith, how does it continue? And then Rasulullah says, and then the mothers and the fathers, make them either Jew or a Christian or a fire worshiper. Meaning that no pressure, parents. Meaning that Allah Ta'ala gives the parents a white piece of paper. And a pen. Right. So it's not. There is no evidence that you are kind of you're destined to what you have to do because of your genes. You influence your children. That does not necessarily mean that the influenced children is going to stay the same, but we influenced them. Until the age of puberty, when they come to the age of puberty, from that point on, they can actually tell the difference between right and wrong. The only thing that they do is just imitate what they see from you. When you are not satisfied with them, you're not satisfied with yourself. When you see them frustrated, because you are frustrated. When you don't keep your promises, they will not keep their promises. When you start getting angry, and when you are frustrated, this is the way they are going to handle their frustration. I mean, don't you see, they are your exact replication. You would exactly do what they would do under the circumstances they are today. So never, never get disappointed with your children, but get disappointed with yourself. I mean, people think that their children are not obeying them, and then they kind of take this is a power. I am the father. I have the power. I'm going to make them listen to what I say. It's all about a power play. It's not about compassion or affection. Like I want them to do their homework, but they are watching TV. Turn off the TV. That's not the way to make them to do their homework. That's not the way to teach them homework is more important than watching TV. You know the story of, this is very interesting because even before they are born, you know, as I said, you know, we kind of think that we are kind of imprisoned by our genes even before we are born. They are born because of our behavior, because of the way we behave, we kind of influence their behavior. You know, this is something that we learn through Sufism. The first time I've heard the story of Hazrat Wafa, you know, everybody knows the story of Wafa, but I'm gonna briefly tell you again, story of venerable Saint Wafa. You know, he's loved by everyone. Even, I think, Sultan Mahmud, when he was escaping from Janissaries, he kind of took refuge in his house. But forget the history. He is so much respected and loved, and he had a beautiful son. He had a beautiful son, and when the time came and he went out to play, and at that time, no water was coming, no pipes or infrastructure. You know, people were bringing water with water skins, and they were selling water. And this child, a beautiful child, when they enter their neighborhood, he would go and punch those water skins and then suck water. Now they so much respect the Sheikh, they cannot even tell that your son is punching our water skins. But it kind of started, it continued so many times that finally they said, hey, we have to talk. And they went to Hazrat Wafa. And they said, we are very sorry, but this is the situation, your son. And every time we come, we enter the neighborhood. Every time we enter, he comes, approaches to the water skins with a nail, punches it, and sucks water. What would you do? What would he do? Really, it's very interesting. He said that he apologized first. The first thing he did was he kind of purchased new water skins and distributed to all people who were distributing water. You know, they compensated their loss. And then they took his son, you know, without really saying anything. He took him inside, you know, they fed him with his mother. And then they tuck him to bed, and then he said, we have to talk to his wife. If my son is doing such a thing, committing such a wrongdoing, there must be either you or I must have done it in our lives in the past. This behavior must be copied by him from us. This must be our behavior. So this. He suggested to his wife that let's think about it and try to find out in our lives if we committed something similar, or if we have been doing anything that resembles this behavior that must have been copied by him. The son is not the guilty. They're seeking the solution in themselves. They're asking the question to themselves and trying to find out what they have done to be a bad example, such a bad example to their son. And then he said that I have been thinking about that, but I could not find anything. And then I asked his wife, did you find something? And she remembered that when she was pregnant, before he was born, when she visited a friend of her, and there was lemons, and she was craving for lemon, and she was doing what is this called, crochet? Mm-hmm. And then she used one of her needles to punch into one of those lemons and then suck juice out of them. As soon as she remembers that, you know, Sheikh Wafa said, okay, this is it. We have to repent, we have to, you know, accept that this is our fault, and then pray that our son stop doing that. And from that moment on, they have never seen him doing the same thing. But this is the way they educate their son. They first look at themselves. They first correct themselves before correcting them, their son. Regardless, the reason why I told this, I have heard this story when I was 20 years old. You know the instance? I was 20 years old. My elder sister wants to marry. And there's a great tension because they really did not fully, they haven't gotten my father's approval completely. And my father has certain, you know, ideas, and they don't want to fall. They said that there's a great tension in the house. And my father was a high ranked officer. I mean, he wouldn't listen to anyone. What I'm talking about is that he was a high ranked officer, and he never listened to anyone in his life. He always gave orders. He has never taken orders. Anyway, but there was one man, I was 20 years old, he respected and listened to, which I didn't know that he was a Sufi Sheikh. So we went to visit him, and I really didn't know he was a Sufi Sheikh. And I know that my father would never listen to anyone. And he sat in front of him, and he started complaining about my sister. And he said, I want this for them, they don't accept that, I want this, I want that, and this and that. And that person, the Sufi Sheikh, and he was a master actually, listened, he did not say a word. He opened his mouth and told this story. The story of Hazreti Vefa. My father listened, you know, the person who never listened and took advice from anyone, he started crying. When he started crying, I said, what's going on? And there's something really terribly wrong here. Because I haven't seen my father, and all of a sudden, I mean, while he was really shouting and ordering and then stopping and crying, in that moment I understood that they did something wrong to my grandfather or grandmother. And then they came, and my father told this to my mom, and then that night I learned that my mother and my father got married without the approval of my grandmother. So take this seriously. These are not stories. These are real life incidents. Anyway, I mean, our topic was really not children, but it came to the education of children. What I was trying to emphasize is this treasure is also being passed. No matter what your genetic combination is, all and everyone has this beautiful treasure in themselves. And there are all these teachings trying to help us how to uncover this treasure, how to bring all these qualities out. And the name of that is purification. And purification is really what all the religions are teaching, what all the prophets are teaching. Rasulullah says, purification is half of faith. Now, when he says purification, half of faith, when you feel that your faith is weak, he really didn't mean that go and take a shower to strengthen your iman. Really, purification is more than purification of external body parts. He also said that purification is the key to salah, to prayers, to regular prayers. And when we kind of think about purification, we always, you know, in the context of regular prayers, we take purification as ablution. You know, salat, namaz, regular prayers are the ascension of the believers. And through this regular prayers, we are given the opportunity to be in the presence of Allah Ta'ala 5 times a day. In preparation for that, the least purification we do is we kind of, there's this ritual of ablution which is necessary, without which you cannot pray. Your prayer will not be accepted, which is washing your hands, rinsing your mouth, face, hands, arms, feet. But if you want to feel the divine presence, really we need more than that. The purification that is being addressed here as the key to salah is more than the purification of external body parts. The whole process is really reminding us that we need another level of purification to be able to feel His divine presence when we do our regular prayers. And that is, you know, cleansing your body parts from dirt and dust is one good thing. But the reason why we are doing that is we are reminding ourselves that we also have to cleanse our faculties from committing sins, from doing wrong. You know, no matter how many times you rinse your mouth, if you're lying, gossiping, breaking hearts, you know, uttering blasphemy, no matter how many times you rinse your mouth will not be cleansed. Your faculties will not be clean, no matter how many gallons of water you use. If you're using your hand to hit instead of caress, if you use your hands to take instead of give, really, it's all the reminder. We're talking about, don't lose the topic. We are talking about uncovering this treasure. We are talking about undusting this treasure chest so that we can unlock it and surface out those qualities. And religion, those practices, those traditions are reminding us what the dirt is and how we can cleanse the dirt. This is the second level of purification, which is still not sufficient. Still this heavy blanket of self is sitting at the top of it. This is not sufficient. According to, you know, not committing, you know, controlling your faculties, not committing sin is a very important step towards purification. But more than that is really cleansing the heart from evil thoughts. Now, according to Sharia, you're not responsible, meaning that you can entertain all kind of evil thoughts, and you cannot be held accountable unless you take the next action and then act upon that thought. But really, it is extremely dangerous to entertain evil thoughts, negativity in you, because that evil thought immediately fires emotions, evil intentions. Once you have the intentions, you will have the will to act upon. This is a chain reaction from evil thoughts to emotions and a strong will, and then you are going to act. Before you understand, you will find yourself committing what you were imagining to do. You know, the scientist says that once you make a decision, once you decide to do something, you have only 200 milliseconds to stop yourself. Good luck. Entertain the evil thought, and then after that, try to stop yourself. So really, the more you entertain those evil thoughts, the more actually you find yourself doing and committing that thing over and over again, and it becomes a habit. If it becomes a habit, you don't even feel remorse about it. A habit is a value, really. Habit becomes your value. Why would you be upset about your values? And a value, eventually your values become yourself, your character. That's the blanket. That's the heavy blanket. And your character is going to be your destiny. Not your genes, your character is going to be your destiny. You can actually shape your character, and that character is going to turn on and off certain genes for you. From evil intentions to bad habits to bad values to your character. unless your character is beautified, that blanket is going to stay over that treasure chest. That's why Rasulullah said, I was sent to perfect your morals, your character. They ask about religion. What is this religion? You know, why Allah Ta'ala has been sending us all these messages? What is the purpose of it? The purpose of a religion is good conduct, beautiful behavior. That's the purpose of the religion. If the religion is not helping us, if all what we have been talking, trying to practice, is not helping us to eliminate all these negativity, evil thoughts, if it is not helping us to develop qualities and characters as the character of Rasulullah, then what is that religion good for? Why are we coming here in the first place? That's the religion is good conduct. And then there's an incredible hadith about all these, what we have been doing and acting. If you do wrong, and all these temptations, evil thoughts, when they are introduced to the heart, they leave a mark, a dark mark in the heart. If you commit a sin, a darkness is marked, a dark spot in the heart. If you keep doing it over and over again, the darkness increases. Then all of a sudden, imagine. So you know, we worry about heart failures. You know, heart failure is a condition when the heart stops pumping enough blood to the cells and cannot meet the need of the body, heart fails. Catastrophe. I'll tell you a catastrophe much worse than that. The heart failure is the time when heart stops guiding us, our faculties, to the truth. When the heart is completely covered with darkness, you know, over and over again, it becomes your habit. Committing sin becomes a habit, becomes a value, becomes a character, and you kind of started, you know, being proud of that situation. That is the failure of the heart. And every time you repent, it is polished. A darkness is removed. There are some examples, there are some touchstones about the behaviors, about good character, good morals. You know, there are some touchstones, indications of people who have achieved cleansing their cells, who were able to remove that heavy blanket between that treasure chest and the outside world. The behavior, the examples of those teaches us, gives us indications, touchstones. Some of these touchstones, some of those, not all, is one important touchstone is that these are the people who love what they love for themselves, for others. These are the people feel happy when you are happy. These are the people feel sad when you are sad. You know, they just live your emotions with you. These are the people, and there's a very, very interesting, they are graceful. You don't see them tormenting, being burden to others. You don't see them inflicting pain to others. They are al-amin, which means that they are completely trust those people. Meaning that you are safe from their hands and from their tongues. But one of the most important touchstones, which I want to tell, which I have been waiting to tell you, the most important touchstone of this kind of behavior is that these are the people who tolerate when they are mistreated. A good example of it is Hasan al-Basri, when his neighbor, not even a Muslim, a Jewish neighbor, his bathroom is leaking towards his living room, and he's burning incense trying to eliminate the bad smell, but it's really terrible. I mean, days pass, months pass, he did not do anything but trying to eliminate this odor. And then one day, his neighbor, Jewish neighbor, came to visit. And then he started smelling this unpleasant smell. And he said, something is wrong here. And I said, no, I have been burning these strange leaves, incense, that's the smell. No, this is the smell of something leaking, and actually it's leaking from my house. And then he was very upset and ashamed when he sees that his house is leaking to Hazrat Hasan al-Basri's house, and then really creating a complete mess there. And he said, why didn't you tell me? And he said that, my religion really teaches me that you have rights over me, and I really did not want to embarrass you by coming you and complaining you about your bathroom. This is the teachings of my religion. And the Jews said that such high values can only be taught by a religion of truth. And from that moment on, he embraced Islam. Assalamu alaikum.